Sports Ethos New York Knicks podcast, Andre Gallagher. I was there. I mean, the Twitter timeline is in shambles. New York sports scene is in shambles right now. I don't even know where to look. I don't even know. I heard someone say that they were numb. I'm not numb. I feel it all. I feel all of it. And you know how confident I was. I was confident going into the game, cautiously optimistic. You know, I'm not always that way. I really felt like they had this one, and they did. They did have it. And they gave it away. They gave it away. I don't know quite where to start. I guess you can kind of just start at the first quarter and go from there. I will say this. At the end of game two, you know, there was a lot of focus on two things. It was focus on the heroics of the New York Knicks, and it was focus on how the referees missed calls. And you notice the difference, right? You notice the difference that the focus is almost solely on Tyrese's heroics and the fact that the Knicks dropped the ball and the mistakes that the Knicks made and not on missed calls. It's just funny how that goes. And I think some of that is because the Knicks took responsibility for their loss and they're not really discussing the referees, but there were some missed calls at the end of this game. And I'll just touch on them briefly because once again, the Knicks lost this game all by themselves. But they definitely didn't get any help from the officials. And the only reason why I'd like more attention to be brought to it is because I do believe that played a factor in game three and Embiid not getting thrown out of that game. Now, I saw Windhorse make a comment. He said, "You want to believe that the Knicks got gifted game two by the referees? Well, the Sixers got gifted game three by the referees by not tossing Embiid. Well, now the Knicks are minus one. Because as much as they have to take responsibility for their own mishaps, they got no help from the referees. Josh Hart was not out of bounds when he was called out of bounds for that save on the baseline. Not out of bounds. Big call. Tyrese Maxey at the end of regulation gets that and one before his three-point shooting heroics. He got the and one on Brunson when Brunson was just backing up, trying not to foul him. He runs into Brunson's chest as he's backing up, and they call a foul. How many times has Brunson gotten contact on his drives and there's no whistle? Josh Hart had a drive in transition where he went right at Embiid, and Embiid bumped his body. No whistle. No whistle. None. Embiid's not putting his body on anyone. He's not jumping. He's barely jumping. There's body contact on every drive on Embiid. There's body contact. Embiid blocked Brunson out of bounds. There was body contact on that play. And you're not calling it. But that's an and one down the stretch all of a sudden. No travel on Maxey's four-point play. Not called. So, yeah. Mishaps on the Knicks' part. But referees, no assistance. Meanwhile, you're talking about fandom timeouts from Philadelphia and tugging of the jerseys, which was going on the whole game. You guys still talking about it. First quarter pretty much went the way I thought it might when we talked about it last show. I talked about how, you know, if Philly was able to, take that first punch from the Knicks, that excitement, and I think we can kind of put the idea that that's going to happen at the Garden to bed because these guys have been playing tight to start the game. I mentioned that in the show. At the end of the show, I said, if we look at past performance, you have to assume that they're going to get off to a slow start. And they did. Philly got a little bit of a lead. Tibbs called a timeout, something I said on the last show, right? I said Tibbs is going to call a timeout. They're going to come out of timeout. They're going to stabilize a bit. And then you're going to get to the Paul Reed minutes, and the Knicks are going to, build a lead. And if they build a nice little solid lead, they might be able to ride that for the rest of the game if they navigate the third quarter, or the halftime adjustments. So the Knicks, they navigated the Paul Reed minutes. They came back from their little deficit. They outscored the Sixers, I think, by 15 points in that second quarter. It was an excellent second quarter. Went into halftime with a little bit of a lead. You wanted that lead to be bigger, but hey, you know what it is. Tight matchup. Let me say that again for some of you. It's a tight matchup. You know how some of you guys were like, oh, we want the Sixers. We match up well against the Sixers. We'll beat the Sixers. There's one thing, there's a difference. Like Dexter was on the show, he said he picked the Knicks in five. That's different. I know Dexter's not taking the Sixers lightly. The Knicks could have beat them in five. They should have beat them in five if they had them beat in five. But the difference in the series after this game is all of 2 points. That's the difference through five games. It's all of 2 points. And I'm not saying, you know what, and now you look at it, you can't really say that there's a matchup that would have been easier. Who knows? But this was a tough matchup, and I knew that this would be a tough matchup, even if the Knicks won in five. It was a tough five. It would have been a tough five game. Just like Denver beating the Lakers. It was a tough five games. Right? And the games could have gone either way, as it's been well documented. This is not a team that's an easy win like some of you thought it would be. This is a tough matchup in the first round. That's why it's the marquee matchup for the networks. Goodness. Don't act like you weren't told. You come out of halftime, the halftime adjustments, and I haven't rewatched the game because I haven't gotten there yet. So I will. I will. But I'm just not there yet. They came out at halftime, and it was really just more of the same. And Embiid had a terrible. Relatively speaking, it was a terrible game. He did not play well. He turned the ball over. I know I looked at it. At one point, he had 9 turnovers. Let me see what he finished with. He finished with 9 turnovers, right? And with that, he was still. Let me just can I just say something? Now, of course, some of this is the overtime. All right, but with the fact that he had 9 turnovers in the game, 9 turnovers, he still managed to be a plus 14 in the game, which led the team. Even with Tyrese Maxey's heroics, he was only a plus 3, and he played a ton of minutes though. Well, so did Embiid, to be fair. It's just that Maxey was on the floor during the Paul Reed minutes, I'm pretty sure, in the second quarter. So, but the Knicks lost going into the fourth quarter. They lost the first quarter, won the second. They actually lost the third quarter by 5 points. And you say, I'm saying they maintained, and I'm saying they maintained because it was the Embiid minutes. And the Knicks have lost the Embiid minutes all series long. Even with him playing poorly, and I'm going to come back to that. Now you go into the end of the third, into the fourth, and I'm sitting there, I'm waiting for the Paul Reed minutes because those are the minutes the Knicks gotta win those minutes and they gotta build on the lead. But they never came. Because Nurse, to his credit, was like, no, F Paul Reed, we ain't doing that no more. We got to keep him beating the game. And if he's coming out, we got to go somewhere else. And he didn't go to Mo Bamba. He went small. He only went, it was only about a minute. It was like a minute and a half or something like that. And the Knicks were like plus 2 in that minute and a half. So it's not the end of the world, but it kind of is the end of the world. You know why? This whole game, I'm looking for Precious to play some minutes. Now, let me preface this, and it's too late to preface, but let me give you some background. I don't like the idea of people wanting specific players to play, and regardless of outcome for the team, they get stuck on the fact that their guy didn't play. Like, so you're more of a fan of the player than the team, or you're more a fan of being right than the team success. You're more a fan of winning your way than winning. Something I heard Doc Rivers say, I don't know if he's the only one who said it. Everybody wants to win, but they want to win their way. To me, one of the great lines to describe basketball in a nutshell. I don't want to make that mistake, and I don't want to be the person that doesn't see the forest for the trees. The Knicks had this game won. It could be argued and should be argued and typically would be argued that whatever you did to get to the point where that game was essentially won was effective. And you can't, after having lost a game in 28 seconds, look at the rest of the game and say everything was wrong. Everything should be done differently. Because the game was, by the numbers, it was won. The problem, however, is that's way too absolute. In 5 quarters of that game, meaning 4 quarters in overtime, the Knicks lost all but one of those quarters. All but one. You can't necessarily legitimately make the argument that what was done previous to those 28 seconds was the right way to go about the game because you lost every single quarter, except for the second. So, if you want to apply some nuance, this what you did in the second quarter was effective. Nothing else you did in any one of those quarters has been effective. And frankly, in a series that is separated by 2 points, and in a game where Embiid was a plus 14 and he had 9 turnovers, nothing you're doing with Embiid is actually working the way you and many people think it is. It's like perception versus reality. I sat here with DJ last week, and I mentioned as like a quick little comment, because everybody's super high on Maxey, and you can't argue it. But Maxey's effectiveness is tied to Embiid. It's tied to Embiid. It's because of Embiid that he's able to operate almost with impunity. Because the big man has to stay out of the paint, and the defense has to rotate to him constantly because he's shooting so well on the outside. And if he puts the ball down one dribble, it's been a problem for the Knicks. Everything the Knicks are doing defensively on Maxey is predicated by what they need to do with Embiid. They don't want the ball to get back to Embiid and have defenders at a disadvantage. When Maxey would come off dribble handoffs or screens, and they're pre-rotating to Embiid, sometimes the corner three is wide open. It's all because they have to get back to Embiid quick as hell. It's because of Embiid. That's why they keep losing the Paul Reed minutes. Maxey is on the floor for a lot of the Paul Reed minutes. Embiid is killing the Knicks, even when he and his numbers are not killing the Knicks. It's his gravity. I heard people talk about Maxey's gravity. It's Embiid's gravity that's helping Maxey. It's Embiid that had Mitchell Robinson in the game at a point when perimeter play and perimeter defense was at a premium. He was still in the game because of Embiid. Let me come back to that. The second quarter was dominated by the Knicks. Nurse knew it, so he did not duplicate that second quarter.
Because it's not just about Paul Reed's 4 or 5 minutes, right? It's the rhythm the team gets into. It's the confidence. It's the run. It's the momentum. So you're playing against a different strategy. You have to somewhat adjust. You're not actually winning Embiid minutes. But there was a guy that seemingly, along with OG Anunoby, who did win some Embiid minutes in a big spot down the stretch. So, listen, to me, the way Precious impacted the last game, he had to play this game. He was a defensive spark. You heard OG talking after the game about him and Precious have this special defensive chemistry. You've seen Precious's defense be impactful for this team when they were struggling and didn't have anybody to play. I understand that nobody's shooting well and you're having spacing issues and you're having problems scoring and putting Precious in the game at anything other than the center position could hurt you offensively. I get it. I might have rolled the dice for a minute or two, but I get it. Once Bogey went down, it's all hands on deck. People thought Alec Burks was going to play. I thought Alec Burks was going to play because I saw him look like he got on the exercise bike for a second. It looked like he was going to come in. You don't play Alec Burks. I'm with you on that. I don't play Alec Burks right now. You can't trust him. If you were watching, you can't trust him. I'm not going to go into it. If you've been watching the Knicks, you know you can't really trust him. For whatever reason, La La Land, right? But you don't even go to Precious and you decide to have these dudes log super heavy minutes on top of the super heavy minutes that they've been logging. And I'm not minutes police guy, but why would you take somebody out of the mix who was already helpful for you, who's already shown that they can him back the series? He's already done it. I'm not asking you to play Jacob Toppin. He's already shown you he can be impactful in this series. And you had a moment there when Embiid came out. If you didn't want to play him before that, I'm not going to say I understand. We can agree to disagree. You're the coach. I already said he was coach of the year. Just because you're coach of the year doesn't mean you don't make mistakes, but you don't have to agree. That's fine. Like, you make the call. The game could have been won based on how you coach the team. So, it is what it is. But when they went small, you bring Dante in the game, and Dante hasn't played well, and God bless Dante. But instead of taking that as an opportunity to get Precious in the game and allow him, you don't lose defense, and then you end up putting the biggest person on the floor in the game. Now, when you run pick and roll, you throw a pocket pass, you're throwing it to Precious, and there's nobody his size with interior defensive abilities to stop him. So now you have opportunity to maybe spark something. You don't lose. I mean, you had OG in the game. You don't lose rim protection when you got OG, but you got somebody who's used to playing in the paint. You got somebody with some on top of OG. They already told you they have defensive chemistry. There was an opportunity for a spark there. You had no Embiid in the game. It was only a minute and a half. I get it. So and they won the minute and a half anyway. But it was an opportunity to see what you got from them. It was an opportunity to give the guys you've been playing a blow. It's an opportunity to give them a blow, to add somebody to the mix. You're playing a Philly team that's they're on their last leg too. They're tired too. I don't want to agree with everything Draymond Green says, but he said that some of those Philly players quit. And I'm not going to lie to you. Some of those guys look beat to me too. I'm not going to name names. Some of those guys look beat. You're putting in a fresh Precious. Even if it's just a minute. He rested Brunson and OG for like a minute or so. Even if it was just a minute, you got a chance to rest everybody. You could have rested Josh. You could have rested Josh. That was a no-risk move. You don't do it. Okay, it was just a minute. You won the minute and a half, any order, whatever it was. You won it. No big deal. All right? You're going down the stretch. You make big plays. Big plays by OG. The Garden was going nuts. Big steals. Josh throws a ball away. Okay, You know, I got the older fans, I got the Charles Oakley throwing a full court pass.
and throwing the game away. I got vibes as soon as that happened. I got those vibes, I'm not gonna lie. Now you got this lead. 28 seconds to go, and I will repeat. Steve Jones Jr. said something yesterday on the podcast before the game even started. He said, the playoffs is about, can you stop this one thing? It was a very simple statement, and I'm going to let you know how I apply it to what happened. So the playoffs is about, can you stop this one thing? And by one thing, let's say these few things, right? Every team has these few things that they do, and you either you can stop it or you can't. And if you can't stop it, you're going to keep seeing it. That's basically another way of saying, you know, playoff series about matchups, right? If you don't match up quite right, you're going to lose. It doesn't matter if you're the better team on paper. It doesn't matter if you got a bunch of Hall of Famers on your team. It doesn't matter. If you don't match up with that other team, you're going to lose. You can't stop that one thing. I think the whole Mitchell Robinson in with the Knicks having that 6-point lead 28 seconds ago, having him in the game, even though he was quote-unquote successful throughout the game defensively. And I'm not going to get into that nuance at the moment because I'm not tearing Mitch down because I think he put in a yeoman's effort. I really do. Whatever that thing was that you thought you were stopping all game was not the thing that you needed to stop at the end of the game. At the end of the game, you need to stop 3-point shot. The one guy on the floor who is piss poor at stopping 3-point shots is Mitchell Robinson. Even though he played good defense throughout the game, even though he stepped up and chased people up the line a few times, his default is poor 3-point perimeter play. That's his default, right? Again, I'm not going to tear him down. He's been like that all year that he's played. In general, that's why shooting centers kill him. But he was all over Embiid at the 3-point line. Give him credit, all over him. Okay, you're asking him, and he was gimpy at the end of the game once again, but one day off. He may not even play in Philadelphia, by the way, because he was definitely gimpy at the end of the game. You're asking him, after he put in this yeoman's effort, to chase around Maxey at the 3-point line, because you know now this is Maxey-centric. At least you should know. Yes, Embiid might be able to shoot a three, but even if Embiid shoots a three, you know it's going to be off Maxey action. So you need speed and quickness. They want to score as quickly as possible. They're not trying to be methodical here. They're not trying to, you know, get a shot up with 6 seconds on the shot clock. They're trying to score as quickly as possible. So how do you combat that? You put as many quick defenders in the game as you can. Whatever Mitchell was doing, and Mitchell made some great plays on Embiid down the stretch, man. He did some awesome, awesome plays. But now at this point in the game, it's speed and quickness. You're not trying to stop Embiid from scoring in the paint anymore. You're not trying to stop him from shooting a mid-range jump shot anymore. You're trying to stop them from getting threes and getting downhill and getting to the line without a hand in their face. That's what you're trying to stop. If you want to question who the best players are to make those plays in that situation, you can do that. I just don't think any of the answers are Mitchell Robinson. Now, I get. Now, you're not going to. Josh misses the free throws. Can we just say Josh missed free throws? Missed free throws. Missed free throws. Period. But on the 4-point play, what the lesson you should have learned right there on that play, let's say it was debatable who your best options were to defend on that possession. What that 4-point play told you was that he was not the right answer. That's what it told you. He was late by a half a step. Again, I'm not killing Mitchell. He was gimpy. He yeoman's effort. You're asking a lot. Maxey's fast as hell. But he was not there. He was not up. He was playing a half a step back. Okay? He needed to be up. He was playing the defense that you played the whole game. He played it on a play where they were looking for a different shot. Desperate for a different shot. That one thing that you were trying to stop all game was not the one thing that they were trying to do at the end of the game. Can you stop this one thing? Can you stop Philadelphia from getting a quick score, number one, at the three-point line? Can you do it? And you might say, well, they were able to slow them down at the three-point line all game long, you know. The only quarter the Knicks won was the second quarter. They came out of that quarter a plus 15. And they went into the quarter down 9. That's a huge turnaround. Plus 15, down 9. 24-point turnaround. But what they were trying to do in that game for those 3 quarters, for almost 4 quarters, was not what they were trying to do at the end. And you were asking Mitchell to stay up on the screen. And the fact is, he was late. He got there. He would have, the whole game, Maxey doesn't take that shot. The whole game, Maxey doesn't pump fake that. The whole game, Maxey turns the corner and tries to get to the front of the rim. That's what he does the whole game. The one thing they needed in that spot was not what he needed the whole game. You needed defense for that spot. You needed to focus on what they were doing right there in that spot. But you want to say, hey, you got caught out there in that play. All right. They get paid too. They get a check too. All right. Now, big play, 4-point play, up two. Give Nurse credit. They had plenty of time to foul. They let the Knicks run the clock. Because he only wanted to foul 2 people. He wanted to foul Mitchell Robinson, and he wanted to foul Josh Hart. That's it. He sees that Josh Hart looks shaky out there. Didn't make a shot last game. Was looking shaky out there. This game did hit a 3. But he looked shaky. He looked shaky at the line. I want Josh Hart to take this free throw. I don't want anybody else out there to take these free throws. I want Josh Hart to take it. Josh Hart was 1 of 6 from 3 in the game. 3 of 5 from the line. He had already missed a free throw. I thought it was a smart move. I thought it was a smart move when he did it. He goes to the line. He misses the first free throw. And to Wally Szczerbiak's credit, when he was doing the post game, the harder free throw at that point was the second free throw. He knocked that down. I'll give Josh credit, but I'm not going to, you know, hey, I'll give you credit for making one, brother. But you're out there. You got the yips at the line. We talked about Josh and Dante responding in this game. They did. I mean, Josh still had a good game, but he didn't respond from a shot-making standpoint. Now you have a situation where they have to go full court, and they need a 3. They're down 3, right? McBride picks up full court. I saw Legler break the play down. He said, you know, McBride can't do ball denial there because they'll throw it over the top, and now you got a full speed Maxey with McBride behind him, and that's not where you want to be. So he plays it smart. Maxey gets the ball, he comes up court. I don't know if Mitchell Robinson tells him he's going to get screened early. I don't know that. I can't say one way or the other. But the screen does come early, it comes right around half court. In that situation, you should be able to go under the screen at half court. And Legler breaks this down. This is credit to Legler. You should be able to go under the screen at half court and meet him on the other side. So you nullify the screen in that situation. But instead, McBride goes over the screen. And so now he's on his hip. And I don't blame Mitchell Robinson. He shot from the logo. Okay? He catches you by surprise there. That said, Mitchell Robinson's, hands are down. So what Mitchell Robinson, the discipline that he showed hands up with Embiid at the three-point line, he doesn't show it here. And, of course, I talked about it on this show weeks ago about Mitchell Robinson always having his goddamn – listen, sorry. He's always got his hands down when he's on the perimeter. And I'm a firm believer, and the Knicks are a firm believer, of keeping your hands up when you're on the perimeter, having a hand up already. I call it the IQ technique, having a hand up already on the closeouts. Don't try to bring it up late. Have it up high already. He doesn't. He never does. But again, Maxi with a tremendous shot from the logo. You almost feel bad for Mitchell even blaming him at all, because who expects this guy to shoot it from there? Who's going to play defense? How are you going to ask him to play defense up there? If he gets up too tight, Maxi flies by him and gets an open shot closer to the line. One of the many reasons why Mitchell Robinson should not have been in the game in that situation. One of the many reasons why you shouldn't have been in the game. And I understand that you need rebounding. It's one of the reasons why you want him in the game is you want a rebound. If you make a miss, you want to get a rebound. I understand some of the reasons. I get it. But if you know it's going to be Maxi and Maxi all day long, if you know that, then your entire defense has to be geared towards stopping Maxi. That's priority number one. And priority number one can't be Mitchell Robinson on Maxi in open court. That can't be it. Now, but let's rewind, because now we know from the post game that Tibbs wanted a foul there. And the reason why there was confusion, and this is all the Knicks' fault, it's all of their faults. Josh Hart took responsibility after the game for all of the players on the floor. All the players on the floor need to know the situation. Deuce, let's be honest, did not know the situation, did not know and understand what needed to happen. And nobody told him. Nobody said it. If Josh had missed both free throws, then obviously you're going to have a two-point game and you don't foul. Obviously, if he made two free throws, then you probably don't foul. You make him score there. But if he misses the first and makes the second with no timeout for Philadelphia, the message had to be to everybody on the floor, hey, he misses the second, no foul. If he makes the second, we foul. That has to be the message conveyed. But Tibbs can't convey that from the sideline to everyone on the floor. The people on the floor have to convey to each other. They have to know the message. And it was discussed as per the post game. It was discussed. So reminders had to be given. Understanding had to be had on the floor. And it wasn't. And Deuce is the number one culprit. And then 1A is everyone else for not saying anything. So Deuce was supposed to foul there. He doesn't. Or maybe he was planning to. But he decided to go over the screen and got himself behind the play. And he never gave himself a chance to foul. Because once he got behind that screen, it was lights out. Because now Maxi already knows that they're planning on fouling him, because he's hearing Tibbs from the sidelines who was caught yelling it out. So he knows. And that's why he pulls up. Because as soon as McBride catches up to him, he's going to foul him. And he knows it. So he pulls up. So yeah, Deuce dropped the ball in that play. Just like Josh dropped the ball in the free throws. And we didn't even get to Jalen Brunson and the game that I thought that he had. He had turnovers in overtime. I'm not even talking about the overtime, because I thought the overtime was a disaster from start to finish. I thought the game overtime was lost before they even got to overtime. I thought their offensive process was trash. I thought the offensive process was trash for most of the game. So this blame to go up and down that roster. Dante was a no-show for the most part, up and down the roster. But let's spend some time on Brunson, who had a relatively efficient 40-point game. I don't like his offensive process down the stretch of these games. He's not looking Maxey had five fouls. They don't go at him. There was opportunity to go at Maxey with OG. Maxey has switched on to OG. I can see OG actually getting annoyed. OG has actually been very animated. He got into it with Tibbs because OG also had a big turnover down a stretch where he tried to pass to Mitchell Robinson when he got in front of the rim. It was a bad pass, and he was yelling. He was running down the court yelling at Tibbs because Tibbs yelled at him that you told me to pass it to him. You told me to pass it to him. The obvious response was, hey, you pass it to him in a different situation, in different spots on the floor, and you had that shot. You don't pass it to him. I saw Brunson take time to explain to OG what happened there because OG was animated at Tibbs. He was yelling at Tibbs as he was running down court. OG has been as talkative, animated, expressive as I've ever seen him in the last two games. And I can see him being annoyed with the offensive process. He's very annoyed with it. And I saw that going back a couple games, and I don't know what the long-term ramifications of all of that is. OG is obviously out there trying to win. Maxey with five fouls. Maxey's murdered you in this whole game, and you don't go at him? You don't go at him? With OG? And I mentioned it to a friend of mine. His OG fumbled some passes. He fumbled the ball early. Yeah, against Lowry. You know what? OG against Lowry, that's not a mismatch. Do not go to OG against Lowry. I'm sitting there. OG was going at Lowry in the first half, and I was sitting there like, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then Lowry knocked the ball around out of his hands, whatever. I don't remember if they turned that ball over or if he actually got it back. But on Maxey with five fouls, you know, OG was relatively effective when he got opportunities in this game. And they don't go to him at all. OG has 17 points in his game. He was 7 of 12. Come on, man. He was 2 of 5 from 3. Come on! Brunson has been the hero for this team all year long. I'm not going to tear Brunson down. But just like when you win a game, we analyze the games that Knicks win sometimes, and we say, well, you know, we didn't like what happened here, and that was a bad game from this guy, and, you know, that was a bad play, and I thought they should have, you know, put this guy back in the game a little bit sooner, and maybe they could have staved off that run. But the Knicks won the game. Yay! And it's okay to do it to Tibbs, who I thought was coach of the year. It's okay to do it to Tibbs. Even though the game was technically won at the end, it's okay to criticize the process. It's all right. The process wasn't perfect. Five quarters in the game, they lost four of them. The process was not perfect. Embiid had nine turnovers in the game and was still a plus 14. What they're doing to Embiid is actually not working. The goal is to score more points than the other team. Every time he's on the floor, they score more points than the Knicks. We keep saying they're playing him well. By playing him well, they're letting other players in the Sixers play well. So they got to balance that better because they're winning all the Embiid minutes. Because what did I say he was in the series? A plus 38. Let's say 38. And now he's a plus 52 in a series that is a two-point difference. You keep telling me that you're playing Embiid well. No, you're not. You are not playing Embiid well. Stop saying that. Nine turnovers in the game, though. Hey, clap it up. That's awesome. Nine turnovers, and you lost the damn game. The game is nip and tuck to the very end, and their quote-unquote best player got nine turnovers in the game. They're giving you the game. They gave you the game. And you gave it right back. And now I got to hear people talk about how the Knicks played Embiid well. No, they did not. They did not. Because it's not just about Embiid. It's Embiid's gravity. It's how he's affecting Maxey, who had 46 points in a game. Their process is not nearly as effective as too many of you think it is. It deserves some question. It deserves a little bit of doubt. And it's okay. It doesn't mean Tibbs is a bad coach, but he showed bad habits in this game. He did. He did manage this game. He managed his game well enough to win it. Give him credit and kudos. He really did. The players lost this game. But that doesn't mean that he managed it as best as he could have. He just managed it good enough to win, which is typically, hey, you take the win and run. We don't care. Just like when Brunson had two bad games in game one and game two, and the next one, I don't care. You won. Congrats. You'll fix it. Live to fight another day. But don't tell me because they should have won the game and they lost it because of the players. Don't tell me that his process was effective when they lost three out of the four quarters in regulation and the whole overtime. Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that in a series where 2 points separate the two teams and one player is a plus 52 or whatever it is, a plus 50, and the second best player in a game where you could have closed them out scores 46 points, don't tell me that your process is beyond reproach. It isn't. Or his process. He's not saying nothing. Don't tell me his process is beyond reproach. It's not. It's not. And you might say, Andre, you're being stupid. You're being stupid. You're making the same mistake you said guys were making in previous games where the defense was fine and guys were harping on when the defense was bad, like in game three. And guys were harping on the offense, and they scored 114 points. You're making the same mistake. Look how good the defense was in this game. Look how few points were scored in regulation. You say, look, Embiid had 9 turnovers. Embiid would have been murdered. Curtis, he would have been crucified after this game if they had lost it. What are you talking about? This is what I'm talking about. When he's on the floor, they're winning, regardless of everything you saw. They are winning when he's on the floor. They're winning. You get that? There's something wrong there. And you say, oh, you know what? Okay, you make a good point. But it's not the defense. It's the offense. Ah, now you're on to something. It's not the defense. It's the offense. The problem is the offense is unlikely to change. It's unlikely to change. So the defense has to be even better. Because he won't change the offense. Dante's not hitting shots. Josh not hitting shots. He's not going OG enough. We're going 5 games into the series and you're still waiting for him to go to OG as much as he should. And there's a balance between going OG too much and not going to him enough. But you saw in the game, when you had to win, the offense was putrid. So when the money was on the line, the best he had to offer was ISO Brunson, which is actually not the most effective offensive strategy for the Knicks. I think DJ posted something like 38% effective field goal percentage on isolation. So I might have gotten that wrong. It's not in front of me. But whatever the number is, it's not good. So with the money on the line, he's going to an ineffective strategy even by the numbers. And he uses numbers a lot in his strategy. By the numbers is an ineffective strategy. And that's where he went. He's clamming up on the offensive end. So that means the defense has to be even better, has to be more effective. You have to generate turnovers off that defense. You have to get in transition off that defense. And they did that a little bit in this game. They got to do it more. And they got to make sure Maxey gets poor quality shots. So that means they have to not duplicate what they did defensively. They need to do something else. They need to do something more unless the offense is going to change. Because you know what? You know what? Paul Reed is likely not to play anymore. Those Paul Reed moments that I always talk about where the Knicks actually outscore and Maxey is not a positive player anymore. Those Paul Reed moments, the Knicks are not going to get anymore. He played 4 minutes in the second quarter, didn't play the second half. And the Knicks are not making Embiid work on offense. When they're on offense, when the Knicks are on offense, what you saw last night was a tired Embiid. And you were able to get some turnovers off of him defensively. Kudos. But you got to do more because he was still a plus 14. You got to make him work on offense. And they didn't do it. And they're probably not going to do it. So the defense has to be better, crisper. They have to make him maybe work more on offense. which is probably where those 9 turnovers came from. Make him work harder. Make those passes harder. Make him move. You got to do something else. Because you keep telling me it's working against Embiid, and they're winning the series when Embiid is on the court. So, yeah, the offense and what they're doing on offense is not sustainable. It's not sustainable. And I'm okay. I've never been the one with, oh, Brunson's shooting too much. I've never been that guy. Like, whatever, man. It might have been a couple shots down the stretch of some games where it's like, hey, we need to do something different there. But Brunson's been a hero all year long, the real MVP. There's no questions about it. But you know what? Nobody's perfect. And the way they were going about the offense down the stretch, whether it was because of Brunson or because of Tibbs, it was nonsense. It was nonsense. You don't go at Maxey with 5 fouls. Let's just stop there. I'm not going to sit here. I'm not DJ. I can't sit here and go X's and O's with you all day long. All the different things they could have done to score. It's hard to score against Philadelphia. That's why I didn't want to play those some of them. Yeah, a little self-edit. A little self-edit there. That's why they're tough. There's no easy answers, but I know what is easy. 5 fouls on Maxey. He switches on OG. Let OG, who had a good game, go at him. Have a little faith in him. Have a little bit of faith. Just a little bit. Because you know Brunson is tired. You know what Brunson's, he was tired. He made big plays. He made some big shots, but he was tired. And I'd leave you with this. What did Brunson say? I talked about it a few shows ago. What did Brunson say about his mistake, his failure against Miami in game 6? He didn't pass to Josh Hart from that play, and he regrets it, and he thinks about it all the time. Remember when he talked about that before the playoffs started? He talked about how that play haunts him and how he let the team down. He talked about it ad nauseum. There's good and bad with that. The good is, well, it's motivated. It's going to motivate you to get better, do better next time. The bad is he's repeated that mistake at least 3 different times in this playoff. And it's only 1 round because he did it in the overtime. He raises up to take a bad shot, and he changes his mind. He doesn't want to take the bad shot. He tries to make the pass, but it's the wrong pass. There's no rhythm in your offense. Nobody knows what you're doing. You're just shooting too much, shooting every time. What do you want? What do you want Hartenstein to do there? That's what happens when you take bad, when you're taking bad shots. That's what happens. No one can anticipate a bad shot. You're not using anyone. You're sitting there ISOing. You decide to take a shot that Nicholas Batum is all over. Give Batum credit. You're looking for an outlet. It's a desperation play. Well, what does that have to do with the play with Josh Hart when he, you know, doesn't make the right pass to Josh Hart and then forces a pass? It's thinking and not being focused in the moment. Right there, you should be focused on making the best play possible. And the best play possible is not taking a contested 3 on Nicholas Batum right there. The best play possible is not necessarily you even shooting right there. The best play possible is for you to get downhill and get the best shot you can. But because you were unsure of yourself, you forced the pass. It was because you were unsure of Josh that you didn't pass him the ball in that Miami series. And I don't blame him. It was because you were unsure of that the right play that was staring you in the face. You second-guessed yourself. You didn't make it. You forced the play, and you forced a different play, and that's what happened at the end of that game. And now you're second-guessing yourself on the shot. You're second-guessing yourself on a move. He traveled on a big play in that game, earlier in the game, where he was second-guessing himself. It was like, listen, don't be ultra-aggressive scoring, and then all of a sudden you want to pull it down at the last second and try to, you know, find an outlet somewhere. And it's like, those outlets don't exist. It's too late. You got yourself too deep in the paint, or you've already committed to a shot. And it's like, you're not going to find an outlet now. Nobody is playing in rhythm with you because you're not playing in rhythm. It's all or nothing. And a lot of times that's enough with Jaylen. A lot of time, and listen, I'm not killing Jaylen. This wasn't the right, he'll tell you himself, he didn't play well this game and he didn't make the right play. So now I'm concerned about the process. I'm concerned about the process from Tibbs. I'm concerned about the process from Jaylen, the whole team. You don't go at Maxey with 5 fouls, and you guys got your head stuck up your butt. And you're going to keep doing that? You think you're going to win the series just going ISO Jalen the whole time? You're not going to use anybody else? You're not going to try to pocket pass Hartenstein here and there? You're not going to try to mix in different opportunities? You're not going to have Josh Hart, you know, bully a smaller player? Like, you're not going to do any of that? You're not going to just make... There was a time when Embiid was matched up on a shooter on the weak side, and Jalen forced a shot. You got to know, hey, Embiid's matched up on a shooter right now. And if I drive right into Embiid's chest, he's got to rotate off a shooter. He's not rotating off Josh. Rotating off a shooter now. Let me go at that. You got to see the floor. You got to see those things. He didn't see him. And that's why I criticize him. Does that mean that Brunson's not everything I said he's been? He's not a hero anymore? No. He had a bad game. I shouldn't say he had a bad game. He made bad plays when it mattered. That one thing, the whole game, was not the one thing at the end of the game. Or I should say the overtime. In the overtime, really. What was needed at the end was not the same as the rest of the game. You were tired. You weren't crisp. Different plays had to be made at the end than the rest of the game. And maybe I didn't make the point well enough earlier. That's what being in the moment is. That's what being instinctive is, and that's what he typically is. It's making the pass to Josh and living with the results. You committed to a score here, and if you're going to outlet pass to something, it's got to be something that's staring you in the face. You can't try to decide it too late. Either anticipate the help and anticipate the pass, or go with the first decision you made and live with the results. So going forward, am I concerned? I said it to Dexter. 3-1 leads don't mean nothing to me. They don't mean nothing to me. I don't care what history says. History changes. You know what? 3-1 is not 3-1 anymore. It's 3-2. It's 3-2. Stop letting the media sprinkle pixie dust on your head and tell you what's going on in the world. Use your brain. It's not 3-1 anymore. It's 3-2. Can a team come back down 3-2 when they're going home? Absolutely. Forget the fact that it's 3 games in a row. It's not 3 games in a row anymore. It's 2 games in a row. That game happened. It's done. It's over. It's won. They did it. When you think about a win streak, you don't think about the second game in the win streak. You think about the next game you got to play. If you're in a 10-game win streak, no one says, well, you got to win 11 games in a row to win 11 games in a row. No, they say you got to win the next game. That's it. It doesn't matter. They won the game. It's not 3-1. It's 3-2. They got one game to win to get to game 7. That's all that matters. 3-1. I'm not saying, listen. This is relatively speaking, okay? 3-1 is a great position to be in a series. It's a great position. It's just not the position that you guys think it is. I don't care what history says. It's just that typically when a team is up 3-1, they're dominant over the other team. And it takes a shift in personnel to change the prospects of the series. That's typically what happens in a 3-1 series, frankly. And now you know Philadelphia can win. They can come to the Garden and win. Do I think they would win in Game 7 in the Garden? No. It would be an utter disaster. But what did I say? A change in personnel, right? Do I want to put that much weight on Bogdanovich being out for the season? Because I didn't mention it in our last show. He's out for the season? No. I don't. I don't want to put that much weight on it. He wasn't playing that many minutes, but those minutes were impactful. They helped the team win. He was a good option for them. Now they don't have it. And now you have a coach who was not even playing Precious when he got a chance. He regressed. Tibbs regressed in this game. He did. You're down a play in your rotation. You only want to find time for Precious? None. Even when the opportunity was there, I understand you're concerned about spacing, but the opportunity was there. So are we seeing a regression
from Tibbs, where it's just like, I'm just gonna go with who the guys I trust, and I'm just gonna run him in the ground. You're not gonna give him any time. It's one day in between games now. You couldn't find Josh 2 minutes to sit down. Jesus. Process wins. Process wins. Process is duplicatable. What's Philly's process now? Now they're like, F Paul Reed. We don't even want his 4 minutes. And maybe they'll give it to you in first half, and then they figure they're going to get it all back in the third quarter, because that's been the formula. And then he's going to play Embiid until his wheels fall off. Because it doesn't matter, because they don't actually need Embiid to score points, because his gravity is leading to Maxey and his endless stamina to score points. Am I concerned? Hell yes. At Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks, at The Watcher 7, Andre Gallagher. Until next time.